Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everyone. Happy Trending Thursday. I am Dr. Baker of the Business Hospital, the one and only business hospital in the world servicing 14 countries. And this is Doctor's Orders. This is our way of helping businesses understand kind of their trajectory, helping them understand different metrics of health. You know, we bring in different experts in to talk about different realities of business. If you've been following the show, you would also know that every day is a different segment, and today is Trending Thursday. And so we've got a guest that's no stranger to the show, if you will. We'll have Ekwu Williams on talking about a host of realities from cyber security, as we've spoken about before, but just generalized technical aspects and elements for a small business and the success of a small business. And Ekwu Williams comes from CyberSure, and so we'll bring him on momentarily. If you would like to join today's dialogue and conversation, you can do so at 859-291-2255. Once again, our call-in number is 859-291-2255. And if you want to send us a message directly, you can at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that is info@drbaker.us. So in the event that you need assistance in real time, I am prepared to help you with that. Or in the event that you want to highlight your business, please send me a message. Let me know. We'll get your radio, your show on the radio, and or your company on the radio, that is. And then we will highlight your business and talk about what makes you amazing and why you're so important to our ecosystem as a small business owner. For definition and for reference, small business is anything with $50 million and under, or 500 employees or less. That includes your micro, your boutique business, your startup founders, your mom and pop businesses, to established businesses that have been running for, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Our job is to make sure all of these business types are healthy. And so therefore, if there is a topic or a subject that you think is important that you want to bring to the forefront, please do so and we will cover it. Well, at this moment, without further ado, I want to bring Ekwu Williams in from CyberSure to join the discussion. Mr. Williams, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Fantastic. And from what I understand, you're calling us from downtown Cincinnati, as you've been a participant and a registrant down at Black Tech Week that Cincinnati is hosting here, which is a national tech conference that's lasting all week. I think the leading sponsor is Lightship Capital. And I think today Serena Williams is talking down at Black Tech Week. You are down there, is that right?
Correct. Actually, I just walked out hearing Serena speak.
Really? Talk to us a little bit about that. How was her speech, or, you know, how was the engagement? Give us a sense and a picture of what it was that you're experiencing down there.
The experience is as well. She was speaking on what is the Serena Ventures. So she is now an angel investor. So she was speaking about how she started being an investor from her times and, you know, investing, having both positive and negative experiences, and then really just wanting to invest in African-American startups. Because as of right now, the stat she actually gave was, I believe, 98.3% of all angel investing goes to white men, so that leaves approximately 1.7% that goes to white women and people of color. So it's interesting to kind of give her take and her dialogue on that and her passion to try to help out people of color in this field, the startup field and the tech ecosystem.
Well, you know what? There's a lot to unpack there, even though the statement itself seems relatively basic and really simple to understand, is that there's a large disparity, one group over another group. However, I choose to look at it with, you know, an additional lens, if you will. Number one is that, you know, in the tech space, you would have to ask, or at least I would have to ask, what drives that reality? Is it because ideas are so much significantly better from one group to another? Is it exposure? Is it the lack of interest from one group to another? Did she give a sense as it relates to what her experience is have led to as to why that disparity is that, or is it strictly because of what we've historically seen and we have to find a way to make things more diverse and inclusive?
It goes to your last statement. Essentially what it comes down to is people lending or investing in people who look like them. And traditionally, as we've seen right now in today's world or in America, you, who you're more comfortable with, right? So if I'm a white man and I have the most capital, I'm more willing to give another white man capital or invest in him because I'm comfortable with him and you look like me. So that's what it has been traditionally and what Serena and other angel investors are trying to do in regards to people of color do the same thing. Like if we can get the money, then we need to begin investing in other additional black startups. But one of the interesting things she did say was because white men have the capital for her to start getting funding because she's trying to raise a fund of, I believe, $110 million is essentially get signed off from a white man. So once you get that trust from someone who has capital, then she was able to obtain some additional capital.
Now, in this instance, I find this to be really interesting. And, you know, when you talk about trending topics, well, tech itself is a trending topic. It has been now for at least the last decade, if not a little bit longer, but significantly over the last 5 years, everyone is talking about tech. But then right after that is funding. You know, I've heard more people talk about angel investors and private equity groups and rounds of funding than I've ever heard in my entire life. And whether you were traditionally trained in this reality or not, you know, common people talking about these realities. You know, when we talk about, you know, having a white person sign off on what it is that you're doing, I guess really I don't even say white person, a white man sign off, is that that's adding credibility to your project, to your company, which allows others to say this is okay to participate in. But if I were to use another example, I want to see how far off is that in another example. If you were in the music industry and you had certain individuals sign off on certain artists, or if you were in the sports industry and you had to have, you know, even with playing recreationally, a certain guy comes and says, man, this guy right here can play, that guy right there can play, or that guy has a certain size on him. Is there a reality where in the tech space, and I'm just doing this based off of her statements, which you listen to, is there a sense that it's more than just familiarity, it's more about that is the sign of what success looks like, and then how do we change that narrative by integrating into that, whether it's through performance of some of the companies, or does it have something to do with just flat out having the access, or is it still more about changing the paradigm of the individuals that essentially hold the key?
It's actually a combination of all the above, and that's what she kind of stressed. Like you said, if you're an athlete or a singer and you want to sign off because you have that backing and that trust, right? So it comes down to who I trust. So if you're trying to get an investment from one white male-ran organization and another male-ran organization gives you that backing, that provides you with the adequate trust, a referral, as you would say, a strong reference that someone's backing you. So if you have that, then it's easier to get capital because essentially right now that's where a lot of the capital lays. So it comes down to the same thing. Go to basketball court and someone says, I want him to play with us. And you know your friend plays. You trust him with that reference. Okay, now he can play on my team. And if any other individual conference, if you think about it, you know, if you get a strong reference in that field or recommendation that someone trusts, they're more likely to go with them. Same with a job that you put in a resume in. You get that one strong reference sometimes about who you know rather than what you know to get you in that that role.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the reasons I would say is less about race and really more about comfort. And the reason why I say it's less about race, although I know a lot of people would argue me that, especially considering the historical nature, especially of blacks, and I would argue that some other groups would feel like they were disenfranchised as well. I think Hispanics would have a really good case as well as it relates to their experience in this country. But the point is that people do business with people that look and feel like them for a host of reasons. Number one is that it's natural. It's no different than the movement that we're looking to do. And I would say that what makes it difficult is that we almost have to convince, I would say, people of color to continue to do business with people of color and to make sure that we're investing in those businesses so that eventually we can close the gap. I mean, you talk about only 1.7%. Let's say that stat is accurate. then it's mind-blowing. But let's say it's inaccurate. But even if it is, it still couldn't be more than 2 or 3%. And we know that that's significantly low. When we look at the black population of our country, we're talking roughly 13%. You would hope that that 2% number or that 1.7% number would be closer to 10%. And then, you know, and if you're very optimistic, you'd want that number at least 15 to 20%. Any sense of how do we get that far when you're talking about tech?
I think eventually we will get there. The more and more we grow in this field, in this industry, and the reality is we have the capital, more money will flow. That's, you know, anybody will jump on that. And that's what you see with just typical angel investors, right? When you do your first seed round, you know, people want to see how you're doing, you know, and then if that organization or that company is growing, more people jump on ship. And I will kind of agree with you at that point, it's less about color. And the only color that matters is green at that point. You know, someone's going to jump in because they know it's money to be made. And if you can be blue, black, green, or orange, if you have a great idea and it's profiting, someone's going to want to help and invest more in that. But you just have to start it off somewhere initially first.
Well, I think it's your idea is one thing, your execution becomes secondary. Is that first, what do you have? Then immediately following that is, well, how are you going to pull it off? And I think that's where the biggest disparity comes in, is that you need an infusion of capital to get something started off. The problem is that infusion of capital that you receive at that initial level isn't coming from angel investors. That's going to come from self-funding. That's going to come from friends and family. That's going to come from people that you're close to, and that might take up to $200,000-$400,000 just to get something moving in order to get the attention of the individuals in these institutions that are investing in that, you know, these seed rounds that now allow you to take your company from, you know, a mediocre MVP startup type company to a real player in the industry. And that's the part that, you know, based on what you're telling us on the speaking engagement that Serena Williams had today at Black Tech Week, is that once you get to that seed level, that number decreases significantly, that black companies are not being invested in, women-owned companies are not being invested in, and I would venture to say that there's other minority groups that simply aren't being invested in, and that's the part that she's looking to fix. I think on our side here at the Business Hospital, is my concern is how do I even get you to the point to where you can be declined at that level? That part is hard within itself. You have a concept, a tech concept. How do I then develop the tech concept? And then how do I get it to the next level? That part alone is enough of an obstacle and a barrier for many of these business owners. Since you've been down there, talk to us a little bit about some of the topics that's been covered down there during Black Tech Week.
I think a lot of topics. One, I think we talked about this earlier, really, and what does it look like to get funded, right? We're talking about NFTs. You're talking about really what does the future look like? Conversations about what is Web3, the growing effort of that NFT process, and really just overall information, networking, and how to really get partnerships. How to network professionally and really learn how to pitch, right? These are all things that help build your community. And really just building it and understand how the ecosystem works in the tech world, especially as a startup, learning how to benchmark off one another, learning less to be less competitive and be more encompassing and supportive of one another, because everybody starting off, it's not necessarily about idea stealing, because a lot of people in organizations have different startups, but a lot of their bases are very similar. A lot of their failures are very similar. And a lot of people don't realize a lot of individuals from a startup are running into the same issues, and how do you overcome that as a startup?
Well, I think what's important about that is the information sharing. Is that right. If you're new as a business owner and there's just certain things you're trying to figure out, for an example, if you come to the Business Hospital and you need assistance, just know that's going to come with an invoice no differently than when you go to the doctor and they ask you for your insurance card first. I'm going to get your tolerance and temperature on what do you think you can spend on treatment. And so those remedies won't be given until compensation is given. So that makes it difficult if someone is searching for answers, but yet they don't have the budget to pay for those answers. Well, you need another area to pull and extract those answers from. So a week like Black Tech Week for Black founders or Black business owners, that becomes important because the information sharing is going on. You know, your registration helped you with that. So therefore, the networking, the conversation, the seminars, the conferences, you know, the entire conference, all of that is a benefit to say, how do you guys navigate around this obstacle? What did you do to get past this barrier? And all of that gives you the common knowledge of things that may be the difference in propelling your company forward or having it crater. What about some of the topics that you have not seen covered down there during Tech Week? And this is no pinpoint against Black Tech Week, but just as a general on what's important and what's prioritized over what isn't.
I think the missing piece of the, I think that they need to talk about really security, talk about the risk, both financial, reputational, cyber risk. What is cybersecurity? How do you secure your platform? These are things that I think is just as important to be a startup, right? If you're sitting on a network, there's always going to be risk involved. How do you mitigate those risks in advance? How do you even look at those things from a risk standpoint to make sure that your company is successful, you know, that it's not going to fail? You know, you have audits that can be looked at. You want to make sure your organization is secure and less risky as possible, because the reality is if you were to get bought out or if there was a merger or acquisition, these are things that an organization want to look at, like what is your risk posture? You know, if I'm going to invest in you, how secure are you? You know, where are your gaps in your network? What are those things I'm looking at? You know, depending on the industry, you could be doing some software solutions for healthcare, right? So is there any gaps in the EPHI? Are we securing HIPAA? You know, how NIST compliant are you when it comes to cyber risk? So those are things I think that they could add when you're coming to a shop or just an organization as a whole.
You know what, you mentioned a lot of really good points there. And if we're going to stay on the topic that we kind of morphed into, which is this fundraising aspect, is that how you secure your technology is very important to an investor. And if you don't have any answers, if you've never had a risk assessment, if you don't know how your technology could be breached at any level or how much of that risk is being passed along to someone that's going to join your cap table. And for those out there, your cap table is just showing who owns it and what percentages that they own of that company. Well, now that investor just purchased risk that they didn't necessarily know that they had. You know, I'll give you a great example of that in my first business. Over 20 some odd years ago, I was in the real estate business after being a mortgage broker, and I got really excited because if you remember back way back when, you know, you can get loans for almost anything. And so they were right. Just lending money out freely, everything from 125% of your mortgage amount to, you know, ARMs, 327s, 228. So, you know, you'd have that fixed rate for 2 years, and then you'd have the variable rate for 20 years afterwards, but it was allowing people to make purchases. Well, the point of me bringing this up is the first home that we ever purchased and or flipped, we made $40,000 off of the transaction and literally thought we were going to be rich. We were like, man, we're going to do this, you know, twice a month, every month. And we thought we had the secret bullet, but what we didn't know is that the roof had termites. And it cost us nearly $15,000 to get the termites out and to repair the roof. And we had a kitchen issue that cost us another $6,000 or $7,000. And the point is that $40,000 went away like right now. And so you were thinking about the risk that was taken on with those dollars. And I wasn't classically trained back then. I just kind of understood mortgages, but not the business side of it. But I'm using that example to say, you would go and ask someone to invest in your technology because you believe it's the best thing since sliced bread. But if you haven't considered those risks and the investor has, well, now that person could be saying no to you. So not only do you not look like them, but now you can't pass due diligence. Is that a fair assessment?
Very fair.
Right. So we have to be, you know, this is a part of those. You have to be double good. In this instance, this helps you be double good, if you will, to say that, no, all our ducks are in a row. We understand the business. We understand where our blind spots are. And it's not that you would inherently know that because you're trained in it, but working with individuals that are could make you look better at the dance, if you will.
Right.
And so at Black Tech Week, I know in my experiences going to tech conferences, not just this one particularly, because I'm not at this particular one, so I can't speak to it specifically, but others that I've gone to in the past, literally throughout the United States, a lot of times we don't talk about risk. They don't talk about cybersecurity. They don't talk about insurances or protections and claims. Has that been a reality of yours when you frequented events, and how important is it to talk about these elements?
It's very important, and I will say that that's one of the things that I haven't heard here, but depending on the tech conference, cyber insurance is starting to become a topic, depending on the industry, but because, again, this one is more around startups, they're not thinking ahead of, do we need cyber insurance? You know, do we need a cyber assessment? Because they might only have one laptop, right? They might have some developers. So they're not sitting on a network. They're not thinking about that. But the reality is when you are building software out, or when you are building a platform, or when you do have a team and you're sharing data information going back and forth, or have a website, how secure are these? How secure is the platform? You know, these are the things that you need to look at, you know, do you have controls in place that when you share information back and forth, are you truly providing a secure channel? You know, if you're leaving your laptop out, does it lock? I mean, it's very small things that people probably won't think about because they think, oh, I'm not a company yet. It's just me and my partner, you know. But there's always risk, you know. There's always going to be something that can create a failure flag that can create additional problems down the road, and if you don't catch it now, it's just going to be worse later.
Well, I know as we built out our technologies, you know, Lawrence Jones, your president of Riskversity, he walked through our technologies many, many years ago to help us flesh out, you know, what should we pay attention to, how to make sure that our technologies would be protected in a way, and in that, just even in that exercise, makes you think about your technology different. You know, so when you're thinking about technology, you're saying, okay, I know what I'm creating to solve whatever problem it is that I believe it's doing, or I think would make something more convenient, but you're not always thinking about what would make it problematic that could keep it from progressing, that would force it to stutter. And in that instance, is that looking at all of the different ways that someone can backdoor the technology, exploit the technology. All of that is important. And as a tech founder or a tech startup, you have to look at your business and say, am I protected? And a lot of people will protect their idea with, you know, an NDA, if you will, or they understand that they need to file for a patent, but they don't take the understanding past those levels of protection. They just kind of leave it there. You know, when you're dealing with tech startups and tech founders, Iku, tell me, are there any usual questions that you're being asked? Are there any general things that they come to the table already knowing, or is it just so new that it's a shock to them and you have to teach them 100% of everything that they know in the space?
It's usually from a standpoint of, I haven't thought about those things. I'm only thinking about making my idea come to life, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. they're focused, which totally makes sense. You know, years ago, I had developed an app to actually support small and minority businesses. And even being in risk, I wasn't necessarily thinking about the technology risk. It was, does it work? You know, how do we get this to market, right? So I understand that thought process. But then once we kind of got our project off and running, then that risk kind of mindset started to kick in. And I start to look at, like, okay, are we sharing information? What are we doing? What are the risks? You know, now that starts thinking about those items. But as a startup, my conversation, if I bring it up, nope, we haven't even thought about it. Cyber insurance is so far-fetched. Like, 9 times out of 10, they say, we're not even there yet. Then you bring up, well, have you looked at the risk posture? you know, from a security standpoint, how secure are you? Then you start to see their eyes kind of widen of, oh, we haven't really thought about that part yet. And then how do we get there?
Mm-hmm. And it makes sense because you're talking about a logical progression of the mind. No differently than, you know, a lot of times people talk about multitasking, and I make the argument that it doesn't exist. I don't want to get into the science of it with the prefrontal cortex and the basal ganglia. But the point is, when you're thinking about one thing at a time, some things are down the road. And when you're thinking about your technology or you're talking about fundraising, well, what that forces you to do is to think about a lot of things at one time. And so you have to have a process of saying, okay, have we covered, have we covered, have we covered? It's one reason why in my work, we have a proprietary 22-step exam that I administer in the form of an assessment to make sure that nothing is missed on a business. And so with years of research, we've narrowed it down to 22 things that every business has to have regardless of the industry. But because I'm trained in it, we've researched it, we've backed it, we know what to look for and we know what order to do it. But if you're developing a technology and you're really excited about the new Flip Your Tripper that you just created, well, some of those things get missed. Talk to us a little bit about kind of the crowd, where you are today. You know, is it you know, people from all over? You know, is it all tech startup founders? Is it large corporations that are participating? What do you see down there?
I see a mixture of everything. You have your startups, you have your corporate sponsors, you have people who are in a technical field like me, and then you have people who are just curious. What is Black Tech? This is the first time ever they had something like that in Cincinnati. So it is something all the above. You're not necessarily, might not be in tech, but you're curious about what this event is. You have people down here who want to network and get those understanding as well. So that's my experience. Is I see a gambit of every walk in life right now that is interested in what really Black Tech Week is for Cincinnati.
Are there any pitches that are going on down there that you've been able to see, or has it been more information?
From what I've seen, I think there are some pitches. There are some stations where it's actually set up where you can get a better understanding of how to pitch. I haven't been part of that session yet, but I'm sure they went well, because that's one of the main focuses on Black Tech Week. It's really, how do you go about that? How do you go about the pitch? How do you go about getting funding? You know, the first thing is you have to know how to accurately pitch to even get there. You know, we all know that it's the first impression, the lasting impression. So that first elevated pitch is off. You might as well count out any type of funding going forward.
Well, you know, that I find that to be something that we work on regularly. It's actually an item line that we just call storytelling. And in that storytelling, sometimes it encompasses the pitch. Sometimes it encompasses your elevator pitch. Sometimes it encompasses how you speak with a bank or anyone when you're telling them about your business. And in that instance, a lot of business owners have a hard time for a couple reasons. Number one, they're doing it or they've invented it, so it makes sense in their mind, but not necessarily how it's articulated so someone else can then connect with it. And it takes time to do that. You know, I remember one of our pitches when we were trying to frame out really the description of our technology. That was days of going through keywords, sentences, sentence restructures, paragraph rephrasings in order to make the statement as condensed and concise as possible, while not, you know, omitting things that were vitally important for the person to understand. And so in that instance, that is an exercise of formality that business owners have to be taught. And that can be very, very difficult, and that can have you eliminated. You know, you've been in this world now for some years, and I think you can attest to how competitive it becomes to pitch for dollars or to launch a technology. I mean, you've been around, you've seen that. Is that correct?
I sure have. You know, and pitching is an art. Like you said, you may know your product in and out, but how do you pitch that accurately? How do you speak to it in a way to get funding? And that's a skill set that has to be taught. to the, you know, again, your mind, there's one thing to say, this is my product, this is how you use it. It's another to convince you in a short matter of span of time to grab your interest, and then after trying to get them to invest in your product or your software, whatever idea or concept you have, that is absolutely a skill set.
Well, I think in that case, go ahead.
No, I said, and that's one thing I think you and I have talked about, you know, being, you've been in sales, I've always been on technology, and how do you speak tech talk to a technical person, and how do I, as a non-salesperson, have a sales pitch, be able to use that sales knowledge or skill set to be able to sell, even what I do with CyberStore, that's a skill set. I can tell you what we do, but can I get you to utilize our services based off my sales pitch? That's something that you learn over time, and then you nail it out.
Which I think those points are very important for people to understand, is that a lot of times what you've created, especially in the tech space, has a technical sense to it. And many times you might not be speaking with anyone that has anything to do with your technology, your industry, or your realm at all. And you've got to convert that over to make them understand. You could literally be speaking to 5 or 6 individuals that have the power to move your company. But in that instance, as you're explaining it, they might be lost on the science, or they may not understand how the technology reaches the consumer, even though it's very clear to you, they're stuck on the tech part of it. And so that becomes a philosophical mismatch that prohibits progress. And I think that's what you're speaking to, is learning those things while remaining an expert at the thing it is that you're bringing to market. So I want to take a break here for a moment to go do a station identification. Everyone, we are here with Trending Thursdays with Eku Williams of CyberSure, talking about technology, fundraising, Black Tech Week as the trending topics for the day. Today's segment is brought to you by Pro Elite Training. That's Pro Elite, all one word, Pro Elite Training. Train with professional athletes through the metronome of music to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace. Download Pro Elite Training on your Google Store, your App Store. Train with Trey Burke of the NBA, or Brandon Tate of the NFL, or bare knuckle champion Tony Johnson Jr. to increase your rhythm, tempo, and pace. So whether you're a sports enthusiast or you just want to get in shape, Pro Elite Training is the technology for you. It is a freemium model. There are hundreds of drills that are accessible to you for free. And if you don't want to download it, you can go to our website at getproelite.com, and then you can do it right there on your browser for no dollars at all. Join the movement. Download Pro Elite Training. So once again, everybody, we've got Eku Williams here. And Eku, if someone wanted to follow up with you, we just want to make sure that they've got your information out there. How can they reach out to you if they've got cybersecurity questions, if they have issues with their technology? How can they reach you in CyberSure?
They can contact me at ewilliams@cybersureLLC.com. That is ewilliams@cybersureLLC.com. And I can also be reached at 513-991-2220. That's 513-991-2220.
Fantastic. And if anyone wants to join today's conversation for any reason at all, whether you need assistance or you just want to contribute to the topic, our call-in number is 859-291-2255, 859-291-2255. And you can send us a message at info@drbaker.us. Once again, that is info@drbaker.us. Well, earlier we started, Eku, talking about relationships and the different dynamics of who receives funding as opposed to what groups do and what groups don't. I remember being in a massive, massive tech meeting. And that's the best way that I can say it, because it was a lot of international dignitaries from Asia that had come, and there were some larger entities here from the U.S. that were in participation. It was invite only. It was relatively small. There was 7 or 8 large, I mean, significantly large entities with probably 12 or 13 businesses there to offer what it was that they had. And I'll never forget this one particular meeting, because one gentleman was well known by six of the entities and the hosting entity. He did not have a product yet, but he had ideas about a science that eventually would become a product. And I watched them give him $2 million that night, and that was after he had already had a $4 million raise from them. And I found that to be unique because they didn't care so much about the product as they were really either betting on him or they had such a connection with him that they just felt like it was comfortable enough to park $6 million in total with this individual and the team that he was establishing. In that case, that speaks to how there's such a disparity with you know, with the numbers that Serena Williams provided at Black Tech Week in Cincinnati here this week, is that, you know, 98% of all, you know, high-level dollars go to white men. What that tells me is that our relationship building has to get stronger. And when I say get stronger, is that we have to frequent places where this exists and find ways to where it's more comfortable, it's more normal to participate in these ways. I know that, you know, if you took an athletic example, if you wanted to get picked in a certain neighborhood, you kind of had to keep showing up. And the more you showed up and the more that you said that you could play, eventually people would start picking you in the event you could play. It's no different in the realm of business, is that you have to show up. Now, you're a tech person by trade and by nature, Iku. So what I would like to know is that, you know, I would imagine that you didn't frequent a lot of pitch competitions, salespeople meetings. That wasn't necessarily your classical training. Talk to me about what did it feel like when you had to engage in that world at a higher level?
It's intimidating. And I can go back to twofold, right? So I can give you my experience when I first developed my app, which is 5-6 years ago. Again, I'm more of a technical person, so I had to put myself in uncomfortable situations. You know, you're hearing these people who are getting money, and you've got to get in where you fit in, so to speak. How do you introduce yourself? How do you break into the conversation? And again, being seen. So I had to start being introduced. You know, it's nothing like that warm introduction by someone you know that introduced you to somebody else. That usually kind of kicks it off. And it goes back to that reference point of, okay, he's an okay guy. He knows his stuff. Doing some lunches here and there, and really just getting involved in the ecosystem. And it got to the point where I was becoming part of email chains. I was starting to get invited to certain meetings or certain events that were kind of what I would consider select members only type of events. But I had to build that trust up within them. And then, of course, I had a product. I was doing something similar to them, but it takes time. And now with CyberSure, it's the same thing. The good part is I've had experience doing that through my app. So being that CyberSure is a startup, I have that skill set now, how to work a room, so to speak. Even though it's different, but it's still the same concept, really making your presence felt and being seen. Because eventually, people are going to want to know, who is this guy that keeps popping up and he's being seen around? So if he's seeing me and I'm seeing you, obviously, we're doing something similar, and eventually you want to get to know that individual person, and that's how it kind of kicks off. But yeah, you definitely have to be comfortable being uncomfortable, especially starting off to be part of the ecosystem.
Well, I like the fact that, you know, you mentioned that it was intimidating. Most people are not transparent enough to say that, and they think that, well, you know, I've got a great idea, or I've done this a few times as it relates to running a company. And maybe you did, but when you're talking about fundraising or you're talking about looking for additional partnerships to help your technology go, you have to put yourself out there in a way to where you're now doing, you know, you're talking about your technology in front of people. You're demonstrating certain things that may not even work yet, but in theory they do. And all of that can create anxiety, or it can make you nervous, or put you in a vulnerable position because you're not right where you want to be, but you have to present it as if you know exactly what's going on. So acknowledging the fact that it's intimidating can be very difficult. You know, you were able to overcome some of that. I know that on my side, I've been in sales since 1990, 94 now, 93, 94. Good night. It's a long time. But in that instance, is that I have gotten used to speaking with people and talking to them about product services, my companies. But for someone else that's developed something, let's say it's a scientist, that might get very difficult. And the reason why I said a scientist is that they run into problems all the time. And all of a sudden they say, well, heck, for the consumers, all we have to do is alter this to that. And then we have a retail brand as opposed to an educational tool. But now how do they go and articulate that becomes difficult. And I would imagine even on the tech side, because you didn't always just do cybersecurity, you also worked in managed IT. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
Right. And
I used to have. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I want you to talk about that. I was going to ask a question about that experience, and I want to hear what you have to say there.
In regards to managing or having staff versus being a partner in a startup?
Was that
the question?
Yes. And the fact that since you were in managed IT first, that came with a certain skill set. And then jumping into a startup came with a different skill set. And then talking about cybersecurity is another one.
So that's a three-headed monster. So being from a what I would consider managed IT or coming from an IT audit background, it's the skill of doing that exactly what it is, right? So if you're an IT, what skill set do you need to do to perform that task and provide an output or make sure your customer or internal client is happy, right? That's the first piece. And then managing individuals is another skill set, because that becomes people skills, which I feel helps you out when it comes to sales, right? Because you get to learn different people experiences. Everybody takes information in differently, and your communication style has to be one which everybody can understand that you can be successful. Then coming over to the startup, which CyberSure is, again, that's intimidating as well, right? Because CyberSure itself is a business, but then cybersecurity is a skill set. So now you're bringing in the two, where you're bringing in that past business acumen, but then how do we grow the business in a cybersecurity landscape that's constantly growing? What skill set do we need? What strategic partners do we need? And how do we grow? Because the challenge is there's a lot of people now who have are getting a better understanding of cybersecurity. So what can we do that creates a niche that other businesses don't? And in our case, our niche is one, we have over 20 plus years of experience per individual in our specific skill set when it comes to cyber, fractional CISO, doing policies and procedures, doing IT audits. We're very experienced and have degrees and certifications from that. Then you bring in the business acumen of growing that and having that to believe in us. And the good part is that final deliverable that provides the confidence of our clients and our soon-to-be clients. Because our clients, as we market ourselves, we all know with any business, and I can speak to you, it's word of mouth, building that trust, building that interest where someone can speak again on your behalf. So if we can speak to somebody, that individual can help speak for us as well as we're going to business up. Because as a startup, you don't always have the funding to have a commercial. You don't always have the funding to put in magazines or have billboards or signage. That's money. So all you have is the skill set, and you have that deliverable and have excellent customer service, but make sure you're very knowledgeable when it comes to that. And then on top of that is constantly growing as the field grows. That is imperative with any technology field. You have to stay abreast because technology is ever changing, and so is cybersecurity. And the thing with cybersecurity is you have to learn it, but you have to be on the offense and defensive, because you have to understand what could the potential bad actors or what we consider cyber criminals do. So what can I do to help a client be proactive, but also be able to understand what are these cyber criminals do to help the clients out as well. So it can be very time consuming. A lot of people, the skill set of doing cybersecurity is one thing, but really being knowledgeable to help the client is another, because that's hours of work really studying and understanding what's going on in today's environment.
Well, you said something I thought was very interesting, which is you have to be on the offensive and the defensive. I want to talk about that for a moment. And that being on the offensive reminds me of something that I tell my team, is that we're in a knowledge society and we have to know more than everyone else. And if we don't, then that renders us worthless. And that's a statement that comes off as arrogant to others, but as a reminder, since I own a business hospital, I have to make sure that I have remedies for my patients, because if not, why would they ever want to come to us if we never know? That means we have to learn everything at the rate in which not only it comes out, but even hypothesize and have vision on what is coming based on things that's already happened, so we can be ahead of those solutions. Then when you're on the defensive, you're looking at realities of making sure that you're participating in the industry, that doesn't get you left out, and that you have good sense making of all of the different realities that touch your industry. Speak on that a little bit in your world about being on the offensive and the defensive.
From an offensive standpoint, it's really getting your clients to understand to do an assessment. Be very proactive. You know, always do an assessment, getting an understanding of your security posture, if there's any gaps in your network. That is being offensive. You want to try to stay ahead of the curve, put your guards up from that standpoint. If you are large entity or even small organization, do you have even cyber liability insurance if something were to happen? That's being, you know, being defensive. So making sure you have endpoint detection, these things that really are your barriers, right? These are your defense, your endpoint detection. Do you have email filters? Are you doing training, right? You know, that's just like working out in the gym, being stronger. If you're an athlete, right, you have to build yourself up to be strong to be able to prevent anything that can occur. And then offensively is really, if a cyber criminal is doing something now, what potential gaps are in the future or what could be, and start to put things in place for that. You know, if you are an entity that's growing, you may need to grow your staff. You may need to get invest more in cyber technology. You know, that's you being offensive and on a defensive mindset, but you kind of need both, especially in today's cyber ecosystem, the world that we live in, because it's a global thing that's going on that is affecting everybody. It's not just small businesses. It's not just big business. If you have a computer and you can log on to a network, you can now be hacked. You can now have your whole system brought down. And this is a business, and it even goes to your personal household. And this is the thing that we try to educate some of our clients on, is it's just as important for you to protect yourself from a personal standpoint into your company. And the way that is now, you have opportunities to work from home, so you have that exposure already. So what you're not doing at home can potentially impact the company you work for. And if they find out you are the culprit of set of risk, or you clicked on the wrong email because you were logged into the network when you shouldn't have been logged off, and now it's been ransomware put on a network and it comes from you, you potentially can lose your job over that. So it's so many realms that people really need to think about when it comes to like this risk posture, especially cybersecurity. And being cyber resilient. And that's what you'll hear a lot as well.
Absolutely. And I think in that case, when you're talking about assessment, you went in there saying one of the things that makes you offensive is to have an assessment. I find it very difficult amongst many business owners to actually say, you know what, give me an assessment. You know, I had a business owner just this morning, an assessment that we were doing, told me in all transparency that, you know, there's a lot of things in my business I don't even want to look at, because I'm scared of what I might see. So if I don't look at it, it's not there. But they know that that's not accurate, but that's the position they've taken, because they may have fallen into some times that are very difficult for the business, or maybe they wandered into a space that they don't quite understand. But my point is that there's a lot of business owners that get nervous by what they're seeing, or what, quite frankly, they haven't seen. And so they say, we'll take, you know, the route of ignoring it. But really, just starting and beginning with an assessment is vitally important, just to know where you are and say, what are my options? And at least to know where my weak spots are. So as I navigate, I know that I have to pay attention to this even more, because it's left vulnerable. in your experience, you know, how willing have business owners been to at least receive an assessment?
Right. I totally agree.
You know, have they been willing to gain an assessment in your experience or not really?
Some are, but you gave the perfect example. A lot of companies that we are dealing with are afraid of that assessment. Again, they know it's what you don't know is what you don't want to know, if that makes sense. So if I show you a tangible report saying, here are your gaps based off the assessment now, depending on your level of executives or how big your organization, now you have to answer to that. Now, what things do I have to put in place? And sometimes it's extra work. Sometimes it could mean additional resources, people, or just investment in adequate technology. And if you know those things that's right in front of you, then that's a scary thing, knowing I know I don't have a budget for something, or I know once this is revealed, the process that we do have, we're not going to be able to have anymore because we've been cheating. But we haven't had any issues, so it's easier not to know. We know the right process, right? So, but, you know, someone might say, hey, I live in a nice neighborhood. I just don't feel like cutting my alarm and locking my doors before I leave the house. I just want to, it's easier. I just have on some shorts. I don't want to carry all that around. I just want to walk in my house. Well, you know you should be locking doors, right? But all it takes is that one time for someone to open your door and break in for you to learn that lesson. Same thing with doing an assessment. You know, a lot of people, they know, like you said, they know the gaps. They know the things that could be doing better. It's scary. But then on the flip side, you have organizations who are gung-ho about the assessment because now they've gotten a budget or they want to get a budget, right? We might be working with the IT director, and the first thing he says is, I need something tangible from someone third party to reveal these things, because so many things we know is going on, but for us to actually get the investment dollars, our executives aren't just taking my word, but as a third party, you don't have no skin in the game, and we're paying you. So all you're doing is providing us your recommendations and the outcome of your assessment, and we'll take it. And so you'll get, I would say you will still get about 50-50, the more progressive. I would say the progressive ones that want to be on the offensive, those are the ones who we get the call from. Those are the ones that want the assessment because they want to make sure nothing happens. And then you have clients who are on the defensive who are what I'll also call reactive. They've actually been breached. Now it's, what do we need to do? Now it's going to cost us. Now we need another assessment done so we can fix these gaps. Give us adequate information so going forward, this doesn't happen again.
So I think in that instance, you mentioned something as it relates to, I know that I need to lock my door, but I'm gone. My argument is when you don't even know what you don't know, right? Like when I say you don't know what you don't know, it's one thing to say, I know I should lock my door. It's another thing to not even know that the door even locks and that you should lock it. And we just have a lot of those issues as a business, especially when it comes to, let's say, growing a tech company or getting fundraising or running a company that uses technology of any sort, that you have issues, you've got blind spots, and so at least know what they are so you can know how to protect them. A lot of companies will buy insurance, you know, general liability, for instance. They'll buy general liability insurance and they'll believe that they're good, but you know that that's not just it. There's other realities. And so in our limited time, somebody buys general liability, they think they're fine, but you would say to that what?
I would say that, have you had a true assessment to truly know what you need to make sure you're adequately covered? And that's what we've been, that is our, I would say that's our service, our business. Is our assessment allows the client to know, this is where all your gaps are, this is what we know to get you adequately covered. And that's what you don't know, right? Because what happens is, now I can speak to, you know, any insurance, you know, depending on what you tell your insurance agent or broker, they're going to give you a policy based off the information you provided them. And what happens is something happens with your house or happens to your network, you're breached. What happens is now you want to put in that claim to say, hey, my house has been broken into, or I got in a car accident, or my system has been breached. Now I want to be covered. And insurance broker says, well, here's your policy. You're only covered up to X amount. Why? Because you didn't truly get an adequate assessment of that, if that makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you as a homeowner, you know, you might only give certain information. You as a company owner might tell the insurance broker, hey, this is my network. Yep, we're doing these things. If you're not doing an assessment, you don't know if you're truly, truly doing it. You're just going off the assumption because you have, like, those tools in place. We come in and say, here's the things that need to be fixed. Now we give you a true assessment. Here's your environment. Not only that, we're able to aggregate and assess and provide a monetary quantification to your network as well. So now you know, wow, I didn't know I had all this exposure. Now I can actually tell broker, this is what I need to get an accurate policy because you're breached. Now you know you're truly covered, and your insurance broker now has truly adequate information from a true assessment. For them to provide that truly covered, and that's our value add to our clients. Same thing with anything else, like in insurance. So a lot of times they'll come out and do an assessment of your house to make sure your house costs as much as it does, right? Same mm-hmm. thing, because now if you're going to get a homeowner's insurance, how much is this house really worth to make sure I cover it? You know, if you have a $150,000 house and you think you bought it for, you know, 100, but your house is really worth 150. You want to make sure it's covered for the 150, not for the 100 you bought it at. You know, truly 150. Get a true assessment to make sure that policy is covered if anything was to happen. Same thing with cyber liability insurance, and that's where we come in.
Which makes sense. Well, in our limited time here, and I know we got to get you back to the conference as well. Remind the listeners how they can contact you or CyberSure in the event that they have questions and/or need service.
Again, I could reach at ewilliams, all one word, at CyberSureLLC, and that is ewilliams@CyberSureLLC.com. And my phone number is 513-991-2220, 513-991-2220.
Fantastic. Equal, as always. Such a pleasure to have you on talking about things that I think are very important. Hopefully the listeners think is important as it relates to seeing their business. And we're not just talking about cyber insurance here, although that is a byproduct of what's offered, but it's also thinking about your business in a way that just keeps you healthy for you to understand where your risk lies and what that means. So in that instance, you can take control of your business, you can remain healthy, and you don't have to have the problems that crater companies.
Yep.
Right, is what we have. No, I'm sorry, go ahead, what was that?
No, I said thank you for having me, and again, anytime you need me, you know, I'm a call away. I'm definitely able to speak on anything trending when it comes to technology. That's my world, and I like to help people out as well.
Fantastic. So we need that. So everybody, that was our episode of Doctor's Orders today on Trending Thursday with Eku Williams of CyberSure. Be sure yourself to join us tomorrow for Financial Freedom Friday, so therefore we can help you make more money and keep more money. Once again, I'm Dr. Baker of the Business Hospital. Enjoy the rest of your day, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.